Succession number 27180, reel number 1.
Bill Hales, reel 1. Can you tell me first of all where you were born?
Dunstan-on-Tyne, Tyne and Wear.
And were you of a big family?
Yes, 8 in the family.
Yeah. And where did you come?
I'm the third.
You were the third, yeah. Brothers and sisters?
There's 3 sisters and 5 brothers.
Right. And where did you go to school?
At Dunstan Hill School.
And what age did you leave school?
I chucked out. And when the Dunkirk lads come back, we were chucked out of school before we finished. So when we went to get our qualifications, the soldiers let the fire with a lot.
Really? They had Dunkirk soldiers billeted in your school?
In school, I chucked all the lads. All the schools were empty and they took over, you know, and it was such a poor state. And we lads used to go up there and either get the clothes off them or the shoes and take them to get them repaired because they couldn't move.
Really?
And the poor devils end up eating horse flesh.
Really?
The soldiers.
Yeah. And in this hall?
Yeah.
So had they been injured or were they just evacuated?
They just come home, you know, they put them anywhere, you know, they come up to the town anywhere and they just took them off, shoved them in the school anyway. They were just like tramps, you know, the poor devils were tired out and falling asleep in the sunshine. And of course we go to get some boots, as I said, do things for them and take them some food.
Really?
All that, you know.
So the army wasn't looking after them?
Not right, really. I mean, horse flesh, because of, you know, and then spuds and all that. And I mean, going into school, they didn't have any proper equipment out there. They're using the school cookery, where the kids learned how to cook. That's all I had.
Did you talk to any of those
people? Oh, yeah. They were really sad, you know, because they were whipped in and they had no equipment and nothing. And I had First World War uniforms on, First World War rifles, and it said that some of them had the ammunition to fire with them.
Gosh, so you got quite a poor image of the British Army then.
Well, my father was brought back. See, he was wounded near Kelly, and they brought him back and they put him in the woods near Kelly, and some of the soldiers come along and said, "Oh, we need a stretcher." They had about 30 or 40, and we need a stretcher to get some more fellas. So they lifted them up on the grass and they put some of their mates on there and got on board ship with a wounded. When they got on board ship, they jumped off the stretchers and got on the ship, you see, and left the wounded on shore.
Really? Was that in the First War?
No, this was in the
Second World War.
Right. And
so he was in the British Expeditionary Force,
And there's a Labour Corps, they come around and found him. He said that German tanks was going round and round, and they knew they were in there, the Germans, and they didn't bother them. And the Labour Corps come along and found them, and they went and got stretchers and doors, anything, and carried them to the ships. And they never got on the ship, the Labour Corps. They went back, got more, and they stopped and got captured. And the father was over the moon, and he always thought of them, you know, like they saved his life. And when everybody come back to England, the Germans were so proud of this Labour Corps that put badly wounded men on ships and this Labour Corps, and they played the band and saluted them. And all the British soldiers used to sing that song, they were the 49ers, and "Oh My Darling Clementine," and mixed up in the 49ers. They were all proud, and not one of them got a medal.
Really? And they'd been prisoners of war?
No, they were sent. They were caught by the Germans and sent back to England with honour. They said that the officer saluted them, and the band played the Labour Corps back on with the wounded. And they never got thought of. My father was over the moon with them, you know. And he was brought home. by an old ambulance, brought to the door, put him on the couch, and then they went out and they brought back his revolver, and they said to my mother, Mrs. Hale signed for this revolver. And he went mad, he said, a bloody revolver, he says, nobody signs for me. And his leg was badly shot up, and they said, my mother says, what can I do? She says, oh, get your own doctor. He says, well, I got no room in hospitals for him. He's not too bad. But he got 100% pension vote.
So did it take a long time for him to recover?
He never recovered. He was always badly limped, and he had an iron on his foot, you know, from the heel to the knee. That's all they got in them days.
So he was a regular soldier, was he?
Yeah, he was one of the silly old forwards last year in the TAs. And the French was all, I don't know what the matter with the French, but they had to take equipment over to France. And they said, oh, you're not going to use our marshal yard, you'll have to build your own. And of course, he was an engineer to build yards, and he was sent over there to build a yard to put our stuff on.
Goodness. So that was 1940, your father came back, yeah. So, did you volunteer, or were you called up?
I volunteered to get away, because I helped to bring the merchant ships and that up from the time what was badly damaged by bombs and things like that.
Right, so that was your job, was it?
No, I was a volunteer. I was trying to be a stonemason, but it wasn't an urgent job in them days. But I had to help them because I didn't have any crew. So I had to bring ships up, and there's one ship, being another lad on there, and the uncle and all them. He says, wash the boat down. And anyway, we were messing about. We washed it down. I said, oh, I'll get the shovel and get them bits of what's in the corner there. When I went up, it was all fingers and hands and things. And I told my uncle I'd get somebody to put them in. Oh, I got time. Took them over. And of course, I swore him. I called him a big silly bugger. And I got a clip in the air. So I went off and over to Newcastle and joined the army then.
So you were put onto that work on the Tyne, and this was bringing up damaged ships, was it? Your uncle was a sailor, was he?
He was, well, he had fingers missing, so he couldn't go or do nothing.
Right.
But he was Merchant Navy, you know, and we had to sign the form 124T. So if you got captured, you were a prisoner of war.
Right.
Long as you signed the form.
So what sort of ships were these? These were any ships that were damaged, were
any merchant ships, and the country was that stupid. I was sitting in the house by myself, and the news come over, you know, and this fella said, ship so-and-so, ship so-and-so, ship so-and-so is leaving the town at 2 o'clock. The wireless fine. I thought, well, it's fine. As he says, tell the Germans are coming out. So I ran around and told my uncle. He looked at me. Yeah, he said, you're right. He said, well, tell the Germans the ships are coming out. That's where England was in them days. But when they come back from Dunkirk, they hardly had any stuff, you know. So they went to the museums and brought all his machine guns and that out and tried to get them to work. And two or three of the lads got blinded because the guns blew up in their face.
These were machine guns out of the museum?
Mm. From the First World War. We just had nothing.
Seems very chaotic.
No good saying about Tony Blair's got no boots and things like that. We had no guns. Well, they didn't, the lads.
So, how long were you on the Tyne bringing these ships up?
I would say about 6 or 7 months. I was only a lad, and one time I had to do fire watching on a ship. Because, you know, the bombers coming up the time, but the ship was damaged, and me and another lad looked after the ship. And the storm come up, it was a wicked storm, and I could hear the rope, it was rope, not chain, boom, boom. And I looked out, I said, we're moving, he says, don't be silly. I said, look, that's light, he says, oh, that's a car going by. I said, it's a blackout. No, it's a car. And anyway, after a bit of time, he says, we are moving. We're going down the Tyne. No steam, nothing, just travelling down with the tide. And he got a lamp and he flashed to the swing bridge over the Tyne. And this fellow must have been asleep, and he must have come alive because we could watch them. And this bridge opened up, and we pushed to the side and went carrying on down the Tyne. But they pulled us back next day.
Just the two of you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of any of those merchant ships you brought?
The only one I remember is King Alfred. He was a small tanker. He was cut in half. They built the front on, and after a bit of time, he was cut in half again, and brought him back, and all the rivets after the second time was loose, so it was sort of leaking bad, and it cut it up. Well, I couldn't remember the others. There was that many, you know, that had some funny names.
So you volunteered to go in the army, and you went to the recruiting office, did you, in Newcastle?
Yeah, and they got a King Shullen. I think it was the last one.
Yeah. And what did they say to you at the recruiting office?
They say, like, you had to swear to the king and country and all that, you know, and I couldn't remember. I got the paperwork upstairs, it was gone that black, now you hardly see it. And, you know, you had big sheets of paper and all that, and then you had to go and have a test and see the doctors, see four doctors and all that, you know, and then it wasn't long before I was in.
How old were you now? At this time, you were
17.
17, right? Yeah. And where did they send you? Where did you have to report?
Formby.
Oh yeah. And did you know what sort of, you know, soldier you'd be? They told you infantry or?
We went all the way through the test, and I went for the East Lancashire's regiment, you know.
Right, and so that was the East Lancs you went to at Formby, yeah. So did you go on the train?
Yeah.
And what was that journey like, do you remember?
Not too bad. We had to get up at Liverpool and go through, you know, and it wasn't too bad.
And when you, were you met at the station?
No, but I've travelled up there before, you see, because ships were built on the Tyne and they couldn't get to the Tyne and had all the drones there for a particular ship. I had to take them on the train and take them up and so they could carry on repairing them.
Oh, the drawings from there. Yeah, right. So you knew your way to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And what was it like, the camp, when you arrived there?
Very good. We had to sleep under what I call a palliasse. And it's a long bag. And had a big pile of straw. And you all had to go and fill it in. And being rookies, we filled it in too far. It was round. So when we tried to lie on it, we kept rolling off. You know, and all that, you know. We had to... One of the old fellas said, best thing to do is jump up and down along it and back and forward, and it went flat then. That's for a bed, straw.
And where did all the other people come from? Were they all some others from Newcastle? Or?
Oh, there's four of us went from Newcastle area, and the rest was all different, you know, different areas.
And what was that first night like?
Pretty awful. Some of the men was crying. You know, I mean, the first time I've been away from home.
Yeah. Didn't worry you, though.
No, it's like been away from home before, you know. Carrying them drones and things and different things up to the different shipyards.
And what were the NCOs like? Because they had to sort of get you all in shape, didn't they?
Actually, I felt sorry because the sergeant was really good and he put us through all the paces and how to do this and how to do that to save your life. But we thought he was hard, but I didn't. I mean, but these cockneys, which was all trouble, you're not London, are you? They caused a lot of trouble. They always knew Johnny Noel, and they always wanted to be in charge. And after we finished training, this sergeant was really good. He was strong, he was fair, and he was, you know. But these was just first time from home. And they had a collection, and they gave the two corporals the money and the sergeant. And a lot of said the sergeant saved our life. He told us how to use a gun without getting the head shot off and things like that, the rifle, like, you know, and different things. He was strict, but he was fair.
Mm. Do you remember his name?
No.
No, yeah, a long time ago. Yeah. And the NCOs, they were...
One was a nasty one. He kept setting the punches and all that, so he made a mistake. He was... He went out downtown and somebody caught him and gave him a punch. because there was funny people in, you know, all called up and all that. Something about, you know.
Must have been all sorts, I suppose.
Oh, so, you know, there were thieves and all sorts. You had to watch the equipment, put your name on everything. Yeah, but they were a good crowd after you got used to them, you know.
How did you take to the basic training?
Very well, I didn't.
The marching was okay, yeah. Was it, and everything, yeah.
The only trouble, they're doing the 25-mile run and all the different things, you know, I forget all the hard training, like over the battlefields and all that. And but we took the regulars on. What you had to do, they had a like island ditch all the way around, and put a lamp in the middle of the island, and all the rookie soldiers on the outside, and they had to stop these regulars. If they come on and kick the lamp out, you are captured. See? Well, they come along and screaming and shouting, you know, they just had the rifles, but you couldn't use them, you know, you had to pretend you're shooting and all that. What happened? They come along and they put their foot on your head because you had a seal helmet on the shoulders and jumped across and give you a kick or something. And the fellas with all black eyes and bruised and everything. And the regular said, now you know what it's like. You know, but it's
all quite that, good training.
Good training, very good. But they had boxing matches there, and that stopped it because the RAF in the army. Boxing matches, but the trouble was nearly everyone, the PT instructors, was ex-boxers, Freddie Mills, all them, because I had damaged eardrums and things like that, you know, so they couldn't go in the army because well, poor old chap who knew a bit of stuff in the army went and boxed a real boxer, but yeah, the stuff was knocked out of him. But Freddie Mills said, come up to me, because you see, you were picked out. You say you may be sitting there and you'll say, oh, you've got to fight so-and-so, you know, and you think, oh, well, man, you see, when you get in there, it could be a big fella or a little fella. And when I got picked out, I looked at this fella, I said, I'm not going in there with him. I said, he can tie me in a knot. Freddie Mills, he's a nice fella. He had a funny voice, but he had a great big head and I couldn't find a hat for him. I said to Fred, I'm not fighting him. Look at him. I said, one blow would kill me. He says, he's easy. I said, you're saying that. He's one of your men. He says, trick him. He says, dance around him to the right, keep going to the right, and keep throwing punches. And then all of a sudden, shift to the left and hit him smack in the ribs. And if he could get two in, of course, I did that. Of course, the fella went down. I went up to Fred. I said, don't pick any more like that. He's a nice fella.
So, you did all your basic training at Formby, did you? What weapons did you do?
I'd done them all at a Sten gun, which was the most useless gun there is. Now, if I fired at you, I would knock that calendar off. You say that, you think I'm joking, the branches would fall off a tree. You know, the most useless gun, it was light. People used to grab it because it was light, light in the rifle, you know. But it was not good.
Yeah. So you did the rifle, the Sten?
Bren gun.
Bren.
The Vicar machine gun. And the Pate.
Yeah. And were you quite a good shot?
Oh, yeah. I was in the team for the 2.2 rifle we had. I think £2 and a lot of vouchers for the NAFI.
Excellent. So in your spare time you went to the NAFI, did you?
Yeah.
And did you get out into the town or?
Well, there wasn't much town, it was only a little village, and you had to go to Liverpool or somewhere like that, you know, but we didn't have any time for that, so they were training.
Yeah. How long were you at Formby?
I think 6 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had a start training again because I ended up in hospital. I had a bit of an accident, so they put me in hospital and been in there for a week or two, and then they said, oh, well, you got to come back and finish it. So I had to go all the way through it again.
Right. Yeah. What sort of accident was that one in training?
Yeah. You know, everybody was, the hospital was full.
Really? Yeah. You didn't get shot?
No, but they said there was some horrible fellas there, but over there, this, when you're using a rifle, you got to sort of squeeze. When you're looking in the sergeant there, he's got a little lollipop with a tiny pinhole what can look down the barrel, and you can see it. And if you pull the trigger too hard, the rifle jumps up. So you say left or right. But right across the other side, there was such a big bang and the screaming and shouting. This rookie, I don't know if he done it on purpose, he had a live round up there and he shot this sergeant right in the head.
Did he kill him?
Yeah, he blew his head off nearly.
Did he get...
there's a court martial and all that. I don't know what happened then.
Do you think it was personal? I mean, did he not...
I think it was because, I mean, before you got down, you opened the bolt 3 or 4 times on the rifle and, you know, so I don't know how he done it.
So, after Formby, where did you go then?
I don't know. Maidenhead, I think.
Maidenhead, yeah. So you went to join your battalion, did you? Which battalion were you in?
I went to the East Lancashires, and I couldn't tell you what. We were all battalion, and there we just companies, you know.
Right, okay. Do you remember which company you were in? A long time ago, I know.
All I remember is Section 22, that's all I remember.
Oh, right. So did your training carry on at Maidenhead then?
We always training, you know, always doing something with bombs or throwing hand grenades or different things, you know. You name it, you had to go do all sorts of things. It was dummy hand grenades because he didn't use too much, you know.
So this would be early 44 by now, wouldn't it?
And then you had to learn to take mines up and all that. Went to Folkestone, and had to clear the beach of real mines, you know. And we were taking these mines up, and we had to stop for a cup of tea, and we had all these warners all over the place, and we had a cup of tea, and somebody looked across, he says, "Bloody hell, Sergeant, come here quick." And there was a young girl and two fellas in their 20s walking across the beach, and he blown his whistle and screaming and shouting, and they were waving back, and of course one of them stood on the mine. One was killed outright, the other was badly hurt. The girl had lost her leg, you know. Oh. And we couldn't go near them because of had to wait for the sweep for the mines.
That was quite nasty then, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Did you think that upset you all, did it?
Yeah, well, it did. I mean, we were just young kids. But we were in a camp once, and walking up and down with a stick on the arm, you know, and this seen his car stop, and then there's three officers coming down, and he was a big one with a big red on and all that, you know, brigadier or something. And he says, "Suppose I was a bloody German," he says, "what would you do?" I said, "I beg your pardon, sir." He says, "If I were that bloody German," he says, "you just stood there, you didn't come and question me or nothing." He says, "If I was a German, he'd come down." But I said, "If you were a German, you would have a machine gun or a gun or something in there, wouldn't you, sir?" He says, "Yes." He says, I said, "I've got a bamboo cane here." I said, "I'll tell you what I would do." I said, "I'd throw it at a German and I would run like hell." "Bloody hell," he says, "that's right." "What could you do with a bamboo stick?"
So how long were you at Folkestone doing this
mine clearing? We went all over the place, you know. We went mostly down the coast, you know, doing all different trainings and all that. And we took the Canadians on, you know, had supposed to be a real bat between each other, had blanks and all, shooting at each other and all that.
What was that like? Was that quite a big operation?
Yes, everybody was in it, you know. Everybody was mixed up and all that, you know. But we enjoyed it, like, but it was hard, mind you, because I had to sleep. You had to get 2 ground sheets, and you had to get it, what you call a pull through. It's a long string with a weight on the end, and on the other end is a bit of cotton, 2x4, we used to call it. You drop the weight through your rifle and then you pull it through, you clean the inside the rifle. Well, when you had the ground sheet, it was put around you, you know, it stopped the rain. But if you put them together, two men put together, you stitch together with your...
2x4.
Your cards. I've forgotten what you call it now. Mm. It's a long, long piece of string with a weight on it, and you just saw the two ground sheets up and made a tent.
So you learnt to do these things.
Yeah.
Did you see much of the Canadians doing?
Oh yeah, a lot of them all.
Yeah. How did you get on with them?
Very well. It's Australians who keep receiving gets.
Were they doing operations at
the? Yeah, they get. But you've got to give them credit, mind you. I mean, they can get in there and you cook out and pinch some of your grub, you know, and you're sure that next morning you had no sugar or something. They had it.
And did you do any schemes with the Americans?
No, they kept us apart somehow. I don't know why. But we were all right with Americans, but the Australians and Americans just hated each other like poison, so we had to be in the middle of them to keep them apart. You know, but the Americans were pretty good. If you wanted anything, they'd give you it.
So this was all the build-up to D-Day, really, wasn't
it?
Did you have any idea what was coming?
No, because we were silly young, we thought it all a game, and see. But if you know, there was bombing going on and all that during the war, and we were young, and that's just for if we would like to, anybody would like to volunteer, you know, say there's chap lost his wife or family or something. Well, he had to be taken out. You couldn't send a fella fighting who lost his wife and family, could you? So we was unofficial. I don't think the war office knew anything about it or anything like that. I think it was all done by the officers. As for volunteers, if anybody lost their family or something like that, would we be prepared to take the place? So I think there was about 30 was all, you know, said you're young, because my father said, don't you let a married man take risks. You think of them, not you. So we all volunteered, and I think I took a place of a fella whose wife was badly injured in London. He lost two of his children, he had three left, and nobody there to look at them, so it was all fixed, so he go, and I took his place. There's about, I think, 15, I think, done that.
And this was ahead of D-Day. When did you know there was going to be a big operation?
We didn't know that, but which was a sad thing, really. I mean, your husband, you got kidneys and all that. And fellas was called up, which was, it's like, I'm volunteered. I mean, they were taken from home or a good job or anything like that. And 6 months before the invasion, there was no leave, which 6 months is a long time to not see your family. And some of the fellas done a bunk, yet we helped them, like, you know, get them over the fence, done a bunk and got back home. And the most nasty thing was waiting for, they knew they were coming home, and so there was a policeman and maybe one or two military police waiting in the street, and of course, poor fella come along. Before he got to the door, he was nabbed and taken back, you know, he was right by the door. And we always used to say, why did you knock on the bloody door and let them talk to their family for 5 minutes? And that's why when the Red Cap was, so the first lot of lads told us, Red Cap was on the beach, he was waving the tanks and what on there. And the poor devil was run over and squashed to pieces on the beach. They said all it was left of him was his hat, you know, they had it in for him.
They weren't popular, were they?
No.
Right. Bill Hales, end of reel one. Bill Hales, reel two. So, what other preparations were there for D-Day? You've done lots and lots of training, and you've done schemes and so on.
Yeah, you just carry on training and everything, you know. But we sent out in the country, and with your Dixie and your water, you had a water bottle full of water. Given two potatoes, each man was given two potatoes and a tin of corned beef between three, and some different, everybody lived like harvest tourism or something like that, and you were sent out, and you were, had to, each three or four had to make a fire, you know, with twigs. We fellas had never done it before. And we, when we got a bit of a flame, we put a Dixie on there, and then these, we call them Swedes, country fellas, you know. And, no, you don't do it like that. You wait the fire goes down to the hot ashes, and, you know, after that, because your Dixie was black with soot, but on the hot ashes it's all right, you see, but you had to listen to them. And when we were in Holland, and it was one of the worst winters we ever had, some of the men were going to shoot themselves, it was that cold. And they were all really cold. I was crying myself, and, you know, I was right out in the open. And this country lad looked across, and there's all these little haystacks ready to pitchfork onto the wagons. He says, go over there.